Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dell, NabTrade's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. Over the last 9 months, we've covered an increasing range of opportunities for investors to consider. And recently, one of our guests said he was actually starting to move a greater proportion of his portfolio to gold. He also said he hates gold, which doesn't sound like a great start. So it's an interesting prospect and one many investors are not particularly well versed in. So today I've invited Chris Welsby, CEO of ETF Securities Australia, to help us understand more about precious metals and how they fit into a modern portfolio. What I'm most excited about with this conversation is that we're not going to cover just gold and silver, the things that you're most familiar with, but also platinum and palladium, which fewer investors might be confident investing in. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Gemma.
So, Chris, we're all loosely familiar with gold, right? Either as jewellery, but also from an economic perspective, it was the standard for determining wealth for a really long time. Times have changed, though, and modern portfolios generally don't include gold at all, or if they do, it's in very small amounts. Can you talk us through a bit of the history and why it's been so important?
So gold began... became important to humans everywhere because gold is widely spread out. So you could have literally tribes in South America who could find gold, and you know, the allure of gold and its brightness and appeal made it important to them. But equally, a tribe in Africa would have the same experience, and a tribe in Europe would have the same experience. So gold just became something that humans seemed to gravitate towards. So when these tribes, you know, it was used for jewelry, but then when these tribes met each other, there were only, the standard way of exchange was barter. So you would exchange some food for another type of food or for timber or whatever it was that was needed. But after a period of time, gold became one of the earliest standards. So it's basically the first form of money where it had a value that people, and wherever you went, people could recognize that value. And because of that, it became entrenched into how we live in our civilization for a long period of time. So we're, you know, almost whenever you look all the way back to 4,000 or 5,000 years, even back to Egypt, gold is a big part of, you know, if you were wealthy, you probably had some gold on you, or you had gold stored, or you had some type of bust made of you of gold, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's held its, because it was the first form of money before fiat currency came in, which is what we have now, which is, you know, notes and coins, for those who don't know what fiat currency is. And because of that, because of its history, even though it doesn't actually have much industrial applications, so it's got about 10 to 15% of gold usage per year is in industrial, which isn't much. When we talk about silver, platinum, and palladium, you'll see that that is very, very low. The rest is mainly jewelry, but also investment. So because people see it as a store of value, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute, because they see it as a store of value, even though it doesn't really have much purpose, it's almost as a historical store of value that people still look at it outside jewelry.
So let's clarify also, and you're pointing this out, gold's been this store of value and it's also been a means of exchange. Do we consider it a currency? It certainly was the benchmark for currency for a really long time. Or do you consider it a commodity? Because it does have practical application in industry, although, as you point out, not a great deal.
Yeah, it's a really good question because it just depends on who you are. Most people in investment circles consider it, you know, they consider it, it's a bit of a contradiction because they consider it the primary commodity, but they really use it as a currency. So... generally, in situations where there's intense dislocation in the market, equity markets are generally negative, gold has outperformed, right? And that means that when other currencies are, because currencies normally go down, generally across the board, they can't all go down, but most of the major currencies go down in terms of crisis. Gold will go up, and so in a sense it's a currency because it's got a separate relationship, or sometimes a negative relationship, with the currencies. I guess as a commodity, most from the point of view of your listeners who are tuning in, most people see it more as a currency and a hedge, really, hedge against negative equity moves. So on the whole, when the equity markets are going up, gold will be decorrelated. So what that means is, I'm not trying to use a lot of jargon, but it means the relationship, there is no statistical relationship between gold and the equity markets. They just basically do their own thing. Mm. But when the equity markets go down, gold is inversely correlated, so it basically goes up.
Yes.
So what people also use it for, as opposed to just being a currency or a commodity, is actually like a hedge against disaster. And you've seen that in many different disastrous situations, like the GFC, but not just the GFC, also when America invaded the Middle East, et cetera, et cetera. You know, even back to like the Korean War and stuff like that, that gold has rallied strongly where the equity markets have gone down in those situations. So it's actually got three usages: currency, commodity, but also this hedge against disaster. And that's why we ETF Securities talk to many investors about using it in a portfolio for, you know, between 2 to 5% almost all the time, because you never know when this type of situation will come up where the equity markets sell off very rapidly, very heavily, and sometimes when the equity markets sell off, so do the fixed income markets. So everything in your portfolio is going down. In almost all situations, not all, but almost all, gold will be the one thing that is going up in value, and it's just reducing the losses that you have in your portfolio. So the general rule is, you want it in your portfolio, and you want gold to be doing badly in your portfolio, because that means that everything else is probably doing
well. If you go to 2-3%, anyway.
Yeah.
So this is the point I think our investment strategist was making a week or two ago, that he is holding a little bit of gold because he needs that defensive asset in there. He was making it very clear that he wasn't bearish, but I'm thinking if you're starting to increase your gold allocation, you've got a little bit of anxiety about what's coming your way.
But a lot of Australians, particularly because in Europe, where I'm more used to, I've been in Australia for 3 years, but Europe, where I spent more of my career talking about gold and ETFs, there's a much higher usage of gold in portfolios, especially with institutional clients. And the same in America, where they've got the big State Street GLD fund, which is, well, at one point it was about $50 billion in assets, which is all physically backed gold in a vault.
Yeah, when you say asset, you mean one asset.
Asset, exactly. One actual physical asset in one vault. But yeah, Australians, because yield is such a big thing in Australia, because you have high yields anyway, and then you have franking, so you get this double whammy. It's difficult for an Australian to buy gold because it doesn't yield, and therefore you're automatically giving up potentially 6 or 7% on a yield trade. You could buy any of the standard banking stocks or the big utilities. But the thing is, with gold, it's not really designed for yield. It's meant as a protection tool. I've seen many SMSF portfolios, and my view is that they're singularly not well protected for downside moves. And gold is a good way to make sure that there's some level of protection in there.
So they do have bucket loads of cash, absolutely bucket loads of cash, SMSFs. Every year say, I'm waiting for a better investment opportunity, and then keep 25% of their portfolio in cash. But that point you're making, that it's not just a hedge, it will actually increase in value theoretically when markets turn, that's probably what SMSFs have not contemplated. You're not getting a yield on it, but it is defensive to the extent that it will actually move inversely rather than just staying steady.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So yeah, I should have been a bit more astute there, because you're right, cash is effectively
it's as hedgy as you get.
Yeah, exactly. It's a full defense. But yeah, it's not actually an appreciator.
No.
In dire times.
Mm. So one thing, I wonder if this has anything to do with why Europeans are more comfortable holding it. Is it in dangerous and highly volatile times, in terms of social strife and political strife and wartime, people were very comfortable holding gold as a physical asset because it was something they could carry on their person and flee. So refugees, and I just speak about some family friends we have who had to leave Russia after the war and things like that, they carried gold on their person. And so they've always had huge amounts of jewellery, which I always found quite an extraordinary thing. You know, they would invest in inverted commas in jewellery because it's an asset that they can see and feel tangibly. So they're quite suspicious of equity markets, but very comfortable with jewellery as an investment. And I was like, that thing ain't going up in value, right? But if you have to leave your home, it's a lot easier to take with you than, you know, your laptop with your login. Things have changed a lot. So that it might be a more historical view, I guess, of the value of something, that being able to carry a tangible asset with you can be quite valuable. But for modern investors, it's an entirely different scenario. So you're saying most of the value is in its ability to act as a hedge and being able to appreciate when everything else is going pear-shaped.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you about the historical element, especially in Europe, where there's two world wars and people had situations where, as you said, they had to carry their, you know, their only belongings and then hope that they survive. And there may be some legacy there. I think to me, and I'm not sure if I can, statistically prove it, but I think it's cultural. So, you know, it's very well known that India is one of the big gold buyers every year, especially around wedding season, because it's deeply part of the culture there. Americans, slightly different. So America had obviously the gold rush. So gold is a big part of the culture, and then you actually have large like family wealth that has been passed down from people who, you know, built their wealth from gold mining, you know, hundreds of years ago. Australia, I just think, is an anomaly because it's very similar to America. Like there is a lot of gold.
Yeah, we had our own gold rushes, yeah.
Exactly. I personally think that it's, as I said, it's deeply about the fact that there isn't really any other developed country with such high yields. So it's so easy. It's been so easy over, you know, a 30 or 40 year period. And then when franking was brought in, whenever that was, 20 years ago, to make money doing not really much, but just making sure that you...
Making simple choices.
Yeah, and also Australia seems to have had a lot less rockiness even in the GFC. The markets went down, but they stabilized much quicker than the American markets and the European markets. And then I think the third point is that because Australia actually, ironically, is so deeply invested in commodities, that everyone knows someone or someone knows someone else who's worked in the mines.
particularly in the last 10 years. Yeah.
Exactly. They'll probably buy Fortescue or BHP rather than gold. And what I'd say to that is actually you need to be very careful when you do that, because although, let's just say, you know, we've seen that for, you know, over the past couple of years, Fortescue rallied from a very, very low base as a standard commodities provider, but not just gold. But in that situation, what you normally do is you get an uptick in the company very, very quickly, but the relationship with gold is not one-to-one at all.
No.
And that company, if there is a big equity market drop, will probably also be deeply affected, whereas gold won't be. So Australians do need to be careful that they don't think that buying a gold company is the same thing as buying physical gold.
Yeah. So probably worth making the point there have been gold miners that have gone broke in Australia when the gold price was doing just fine.
Yes.
If you're not good at capital management, or the one that I'm thinking of was there was a collapse, and a physical collapse of the mine.
Yep.
So there's still plenty of gold in there, but if you're not getting it out, it's not worth much to anybody. So to the most important question then, is if I believe that this is something I want to hold in my portfolio, I'm concerned about volatility now, or I know it's going to come at some point in the future. Yep. And Graham Hands from Cufflinks was on recently, and he made the point that most of us don't think about. He was talking about his experience prior to the GFC, watching credit markets lock up, that there will be a fall of 50% or more in equity markets two or three times in your lifetime, and you need to be prepared for that. So if that's the thinking you want to adopt, how do you hold gold?
Well, that's why gold ETFs have become very popular, because you really, your choices are, you buy it from somewhere like the Perth Mint, and they do everything for you. So you pay money, and then you pay some more money to vault it with them. If you don't want it delivered to you, if you want it delivered to yourself, you'd be prudent to make sure you buy a safe as well. But there's a
if you have a self-managed super fund as well, you would be quite careful with assets like that because you're not supposed to keep, you know, they're probably not counted as a personal use asset. They're not supposed to keep them in your home or anywhere that you can actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a few extra things you need to consider if you have a self-managed super fund.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually. Yeah.
So you would be wanting to pay to vault it.
Yeah, exactly, off-site. To keep it. And yeah, and it makes sense anyway because you know, most people's home safes, and this is a different thing, but I saw an investigation where people put lots of jewelry in their safes, but actually the safes are light enough
that, that you most just take it with
yeah
you
they
anyway.
Can just basically just rip it out and carry it out, which is sort of defeats the purpose. But yeah, you can buy it physically buy it. You can buy what I call a proxy, which is gold companies. We've already discussed that. So VanEck is another ETF provider. They've got a very famous product called the Gold Miners, and it basically is, you know, an assortment of gold miners. So if you believe that gold miners are going to go up, you can buy that. But as I said, that's a very different proposition. It's not a bad proposition, but it's a different proposition to physically back gold. It doesn't have some of the hedging properties we're talking about. Or you can buy it through an ETF, so an exchange-traded fund, which tracks precisely the price of gold, because in fact what it's doing is storing gold bullion in a vault and then issuing exchange traded funds as sort of stock paper over the top of it. So it's like being a wholesale buyer of gold, but you can buy it in units of $150, right? So and it's perfect because you can actually see via the website, there's audit trails of exactly what the gold bullion numbers are, et cetera, et cetera. And in a disaster situation, you can actually, we call it redeem, but you can come to the fund manager, us, or any of the others, and actually ask for the gold to be physically delivered to you.
Oh.
So it's actually pure physical bullion. You just have it in a paper form to make sure you can put you can put it in the SMSF or equivalent. And that way, to your point, you can build this protection capability, which you hope won't happen, but to your other point, will probably happen three times in your lifetime.
So this is, and I don't know if it happens in Australia, so one of the things that people and you and I have spoken about previously is synthetic ETFs. Synthetics over gold, are they around? Is that something people have to look out for?
Yeah, so when you make a choice, you do need to make a choice as to whether you're happy to take, you know, ours is physically backed, and we believe there's no pun intended value to that because it is it's gold bullion in a vault, right? But other providers have different ways to do it, and some of them have synthetic. Now, the thing is with synthetic, unlike many people, when I talk about it in Australia, most people hate synthetics. It's almost like a bad word.
It's probably worth telling people what a synthetic is.
Yeah, so a synthetic is where there is no physical backing. So what it is normally a structure that's happening in the background, normally supported by a bank through something called a swap, which is a derivative contract, to give precisely the performance of that product, say gold, back to the investor. So they came under a lot of scrutiny in the GFC because
I think just your description is the reason why people hate them.
Yeah.
Lots of words that people don't
necessarily
understand.
Don't understand. But actually the reason why I think that in some situations they're really worthwhile, probably not for gold, but is something, and we're not covering it today, but something like oil. So if you want to invest in oil, How do you do it without taking delivery of oil barrels? And I'm literally talking about delivery of oil barrels.
So you
have to have it in synthetic.
Yeah,
that's the only way to do it. And there's a whole number of things that can happen with synthetics to make sure that investors are protected. Lots of fancy words, but it's called collateral. But basically, you are putting money aside to make sure that if the structure collapses, that the investors get back money. But the point is, for some commodities, synthetic structures are actually completely necessary. Same with lean hogs, which is a commodity.
You definitely don't want to take delivery of those.
Exactly. But for gold, I would suggest that you don't need to take synthetic. So if you're concerned about it, you just take the ones that are physically backed.
So It's such a useful conversation, but silver's the other one we were going to discuss. People are familiar with it, they understand it. Why is it still important?
Well, people call silver like the poor man's gold. I don't think that's particularly fair necessarily, but it is, you know, when you go into a vault, I've been in there twice, you know, you can see that silver is a lot bigger, right? So you know, for the same amount of gold, you're getting a lot more silver. It takes up a lot more space in the vault, etc. The thing is with silver, it's a bit of a strange one because unlike gold, which is 10 to 15% industrial, silver's much more like 50% industrial.
So, it's got much more practical purpose.
Exactly. So to your point before about currency or commodity for gold, that's really, really grey for silver. With silver, it has a really strong correlation with gold. And actually some people who are much more in tune with the markets and some people who are short-term traders, that's not necessarily the same thing, but often it is, they use silver as opposed to gold because silver will generally do what gold does, but just a lot more aggressively. So it's much more volatile. So you can get like 3% moves on silver for a 1% equivalent move in gold. So their view is, okay, if I think that something really bad and negative is going to happen, I want the upside on that significantly, I'll take silver. But silver also can underperform because it versus gold because of the industrial aspects, right? So if all the mines around the world are producing silver correctly and supply, you know, people just don't need as much silver during that period of the year, you know, it will go down. And there's something called the gold-silver ratio. And a lot of people use it to work out whether they think silver is undervalued versus gold because the relationship is so strong. And if silver's undervalued versus gold, which it is right now, some people look at silver as better value because they believe that the relationship will snap back. And the undervalued thing will become back to the average. So it's really, silver is where you begin to go much more into the commodity aspect of precious metals, whereas gold, not so much.
So what sort of industrial purposes does silver have?
Well, it can range from people see it on the TV all the time when you see guys in factories with the masks on, they're doing soldering. You have to have silver for that. It's an amazing conductor. It's used in batteries, LED chips, medicine.
Everyone's very excited about batteries at the moment.
Batteries. I mean, we were talking just before we went on air about lithium. So silver is another component that gets used a lot with lithium in batteries.
That's quite exciting for people, I guess. It's interesting to see. And same sort of story about how you hold it?
Yeah, exactly the same. So because it is bullion, it can just be stored in a vault. Gold, it's worth investors knowing this, that gold, silver, platinum and palladium, they've all got future contracts on them that are globally available. Now, I don't expect any of the investors on this call to be trading futures, but the point is it means that the price of gold and silver and platinum and palladium is easily determined at any point in the day. So silver is the same. You are actually literally buying silver. You've chosen it over gold. Most people make a choice depending on the things we talked about before.
Would you hold both if you're looking for both ahead and a bit more potential upside?
The only time people would hold both gold and silver at the same time is if they were using gold as a pure hedge, like we discussed previously, and they had a very strong view that silver was about to have either an increase in demand above the normal or a supply constraint. So you see that, and I'll talk to you about it in a couple of minutes when we talk about palladium. But with palladium, not silver, but palladium, you know, there was strife in Russia, which shut down some of the mines, and that immediately ticks up in price. So at that point, if you have gold and silver, you're actually investing them for two separate reasons.
Right.
But if it's just should I choose gold or silver because it's like gold, then no, you wouldn't take
Yeah, you're not trying to diversify your precious metals.
No, exactly.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about platinum and palladium. I love this because palladium in particular, I've got no experience with whatsoever. And platinum I find interesting because we really only know it as it relates to jewellery.
Yep.
I just remember the hilarious story of a male friend of mine trying to understand why Tiffany jewellery was so expensive because it was just silver. And then him being informed by another male friend who had recently become engaged that was not what he was going to be buying, and he should not be assuming that the prices would be the same as the local jewellery store. So tell us a bit more about these two.
Okay, so they're the, as you've clearly implying, they're the lesser known precious metals, but they're, you know, they're the ones that are for experts. They make up the, not the end, but the main four.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called white metals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, platinum is denser, mm-hmm. And therefore more expensive. And to what you said about jewelry, the reason why it's used in jewelry is because you can basically beat it up and mold it without it breaking.
Yeah.
So unlike palladium, which is very, very similar but less dense, but if you're a jeweler and you get it wrong, it will snap.
Right.
And then you have to sort of retry it again. So that's why platinum is being used massively in jewelry, because it's strong, but very rare. So what happened is that it wasn't particularly expensive for a very, very long period of time, relative to gold and silver, and it was used as a sort of substitute for silver to a certain extent. But then cars came along, and particularly with cars, catalytic converters, right? So platinum is used in diesel converters, and palladium is used in petrol. So they have, and I can't tell you the chemical reasons why each is used.
I'm not going to ask any questions, that's fine.
But they are used separately, and with that demand profile, they've become much, much more valuable. Mm. And again, to your point about sort of batteries, although this is not battery related, but when you see, whole rafts of people using, if you think about the fact that catalytic converters didn't really exist 20 years ago, and now they're mandated everywhere, and you've got something in there which is the main chemical used to sort of purify the emissions, which is highly rare, then you can, if you're into commodities and you want to take part in potentially an uptick in that, then you can. But they are different. I mean, the car demand is a very interesting one, because, as I said before, palladium has actually more than doubled since 2016. In fact, it's gone up about 150% from its 2016 position, because what happened is, especially in Europe, is that there was a shift away from diesel cars, where the price of diesel went up, but also people were starting to get concerned about the environmental aspects.
Volkswagen.
Around.
Volkswagen.
Yeah, exactly. VW was the big one. And so there's a big shift across to back to petrol cars after sort of, 15 years of lots of Europeans moving away from petrol, because petrol prices are so high in Europe compared with Australia and America, moving back towards them, and therefore they're using palladium, which is even rarer than platinum, and so that demand has made it sort of, as I said, go up 150%. Whereas with platinum, because of that, with diesel cars becoming less in demand, is actually halved.
Wow!
So you've had this.
Okay, so they're highly volatile compared to the other two, which are a hedge and a store of value.
Yeah, it's just industrial applications.
Right.
Yeah, they're proper commodities. So although the jewellery is a significant part of, as we said, platinum and palladium is sometimes used as well, those jewellery demand and supply is not really changing the price. It's about these big demand shifts in industry.
You don't anticipate enormous changes in demand for jewellery anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of population growth level rather than, and perhaps you could talk about emerging markets and so on, but even then, not dramatic changes like the technology uses. So with these ones then, if you look at where they fit in a portfolio, the silver and gold have a purpose that's related to store of value and protecting yourself. These two, it's a really different scenario. You want to have a pretty acute understanding of where they're used in industry and what the prospects of those industries are.
Yeah, exactly. So for both of them, they should have a good long-term uptick, despite the fact that platinum's gone down. Diesel cars are still used, and actually there's potential for them to be used as a substitute in petrol cars as well. Mm-hmm. So you'd expect both of them over the long term, whilst we use such cars and even with electric vehicles, combustion cars are going to be around for mm-hmm. some time. They can't just be wiped out straight away. They are different. They're there for different purposes. I wouldn't say that you need to know really technically what's going on, but if you know that, for example, palladium is petrol and platinum is diesel, and it's well telegraphed that there's a shift, then because commodities are so driven by demand and supply, you can say everything is, but commodities really are, if you know something is very rare, and you can't get it out of the earth quickly enough to meet demand, then there's very high chance that those will go up a lot. So it's not like you need to know the chemical properties, but you just keep an eye on the different changes and trends in the car industry, really, to dictate that. And I guess there's also one thing for the listeners is sometimes, and obviously we've gone into four different precious metals. They've all got their sort of unique drivers, and sometimes it can be confusing. But what we have is a precious metals basket as well. So if people are unsure what to do, they want a bit of all of the things we've discussed, you can actually just buy a precious metals basket rather than taking a view on any particular one. I mean, it will mean that you're slightly, the hedging properties of gold are slightly less. But then your exposure to industrial usage is slightly higher.
So you've got a bit of volatility in there as well.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So Chris, any other suggestions about where people can go to find out more about these kinds of assets? It's probably new for most people.
Well, if you go on the internet, gold and silver are covered really, really extensively, platinum and palladium less so. ETF Securities, we've got a lot of information on precious metals, because our founder was actually the first person in the world to build a gold ETF.
Right,
so,
okay.
So GOLD, which is the easily rememberable ticker for our...
if you can't remember that, you're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. For our gold ETF that we talked about before. That's been in Australia since 2003. It's the longest standing gold ETF ever. So it just means that we've got quite a lot of expertise around that. But to understand more about like the actual supply and demand things, there are many different, you can go to the Perth Mint. They've got an excellent, website explaining the history of how things have happened. And they're very, very well covered. Platinum and palladium, slightly harder, just because they're less well known. But again, we can help, and it doesn't take much research to find out.
Beautiful. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Gemma.
As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Your Wealth podcast. We hope, as always, that it's been useful to you in helping you on your path to building and preserving your wealth. We always love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.